Concerned about the impacts on a number of the resources of Prince William Sound. What we generally do, our group has been to a lot of oil spills throughout the world and throughout the United States. And what we've tried to do to add coherency to the evaluation of what's happening and the assessment of what's happening is try to form a nightly science meeting where the resource agencies and those people who are concerned about the resources and are involved in evaluating and studying the resources can get together. And so every night we've been meeting, and believe me, the group is on the order of 40 or 50 people. It seems to be getting larger every night. I think we're manufacturing scientists here in Valdez. Anyway, but we're getting together every night, sharing our observations during the day, our baseline studies, some of our baseline studies initially, and just trying to communicate among the group so we can help each other with the information that's being gathered by some of the groups that are going out evaluating the environmental impacts and the environmental assessment. What we've done in this spill is we've divided the resource assessments into seven major areas. Anyway, and one of the unique things I want to emphasize about this spill, and I'll mention those areas in a second, one of the unique things I want to mention about this spill is we are having extremely good cooperation in doing our work between the states, the federal agencies, and the consultants that Exxon has hired. We've been working all together to try to evaluate the impacts on the resources and assess what the oil is doing. We've basically developed seven major areas of investigation and evaluation. Those areas are birds, marine mammals, beaches, intertidal zones, finfish, water quality, and the zooplankton, bioplankton characteristics. What we have on the stage behind me are a number of experts who are heading each of these groups. Later on, I'm going to invite you to ask questions to any of them on these major categories, and we'll repeat them again so you're familiar with them. But before I do that, I'd like to introduce the environmental coordinator for Exxon, who is intimately involved in this joint study program to evaluate the impacts, and he wants to tell you a little bit about their involvement in it. So Al Mackey, go ahead.
Thank you, John. My name is Al Mackey, a senior environmental scientist. That's M-A-K-I, senior environmental scientist for Exxon Company USA, based in Anchorage, Alaska. I've been on site with this spill since Friday morning, and we've been organizing the environmental assessment program since that time. The TAC we've organized primarily was first to identify those sensitive environmental areas within the sound for exclusion booming. We began our environmental assessment with contacting the local fishing community, the commercial fishermen, to identify those areas. The rationale was that they, as the end resource user, would have very current information on the habitat sensitivities and allow a very accurate prioritization of the habitats for exclusion booming. We then met with a number of the resource agency staff and were able to identify those areas that did indeed require exclusion booming, and the program was launched from there. It continues yet today. We are still placing boom in some of the key and sensitive habitats. The second piece then was to begin immediate assessment of the environmental impacts of the spill and as it moved through the sound. To do this, we mobilized an effort with a number of extramural contractors. These are outside contractors and researchers from Alaska in the lower 48. Our tact was basically in two key directions. We wanted first to define the chemistry and fate of the hydrocarbons and in the oil spill as it moved through the sound. We wanted to get a good handle on the direction, movement, and overall trajectory, concentrations at surface and with depth. The program now is underway. We've had samples gathered now for the past 3 days. The other piece, the other key piece of the program has been the biological resource assessment. And we've organized this particular angle from the standpoint of the communities that exist out there. We've tried to bring in what were considered to be the experts, the people who have done research for years in the Sound, the people who have published most and who are most familiar with the biota and the sampling methods and the techniques it takes to mobilize a field crew and accurately sample the biota in the field. So, if you will, the program then has two angles, the chemistry fate and the other side, the biological effects. Together now, this staff constitutes 39 researchers. We have a number of boats currently out in the field, a very ambitious sampling program coordinated with the state and federal resource agencies. We have a number of agency advisors working together to define the ultimate impacts of the spill. Working on the biological side, We've worked up through, I say we're sampling some of the plankton organisms. We're looking at sediment. We're looking at organisms that exist within the sediment. We're looking at larval fish populations, trying to discern effects on out-migrating salmon. Looking at such things as the moving up the trophic level, the marine mammals and the marine birds. I think we've brought in some of the most renowned experts that we were able to locate in the lower 48. So you can see we're trying to look at each of the components of the aquatic ecosystem and define the ultimate fate and effects on the population ecology of these organisms. Now, I have one request I'd like to leave with the press at this time. An unfortunate incident occurred just before I came up here. I had to dispatch the police to the Animal Rescue Center. It seems that we have now, for the first time this afternoon, have recovered a number of oiled birds and at least one otter. We have some others, a number of others observed, and recovery craft are underway bringing those back. Unfortunately, a number of overzealous members of the press saw fit to barge through the door and disturb these animals and actually resulted in some damage to some of the equipment. So I'd like to make a plea that you may be interested in the story, but we're ultimately interested in the benefit of the wildlife concerned. So I'd ask you to use discretion around the animal facility. Okay, now with that in mind here, and we've got the overall resource assessment group. You'll meet a number of the agency folks and this evening and some of the discussion that's underway. The key federal agencies have played a primary role have been NOAA, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, as well as the state agencies, the Alaska Department of Biological Conservation and the Alaska Department of Fish and Game. The chemistry program we have underway involves transect sampling throughout the bay to define, again, concentrations of hydrocarbons. The number of stations underway for sampling throughout the trajectory area on the biological effects have been identified. The field crew is out today gathering samples and returning these for a number of analyses and population counts. So that's a real quick picture of what we have underway, and I'd be glad to address questions here after we hear from the other agency folks.
Dr. Al Mackey, the Exxon biologist.
What I'd like to do now is reiterate those seven areas that we've divided into to do resource assessment and impact as a result of the spill, and then we'll open the floor to questions. And we have people standing back here who can, we'll try to direct that question to, and hopefully they can provide a satisfactory answer. Those areas are birds, marine mammals, beaches, intertidal zones, finfish, water quality, and zooplankton, phytoplankton. So,
I have a question for Mr. Mackey.
Sir.
I'm sorry, the biologist. I gave the wrong name here. The other fellow.
Excuse me, what was the topic of your question?
I was wondering if anyone has talked to Lisa Rudderman, who was up here two nights ago, who's been working 6 years on a project with the University of Minnesota and Alaska Pacific University on the otters in Prince William Sound. And her assessment was that she was looking at, after 6 years of studying these animals and being out there twice a day for the last 7 days, looking at 100% mortality rate.
Let me introduce Everett Robertson Wilson from the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. Yeah. Could he maybe answer that question?
Yeah, I'm Everett Robinson Wilson from the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, and Lisa has been working on working on research up here under direction from one of our researchers, Tony and DeGange. Yeah, thank you. And in conjunction with some other people from Cordova. And, you know, we're very closely tied in with what Lisa's doing. We've been working with her all ever since this happened.
Do you agree with her assessment?
Not necessarily, no. I do not.
Could I ask each of the individuals where to give us a very brief assessment of the damage to this point and where tomorrow's crisis is in each of their areas?
Okay. Let me call up a few more people. Eric, do you want to come on up here then?
I can address, you know, the damage to date. And essentially, we're never going to have a body count, essentially, if you can. We're never going to be able to tell how many animals died out there. There's just no way to assess that. We can't find them all. Some of them sink, some of them wash up on beaches that we'll never be able to look on. We'll never know what exactly the damage is. We are working on trying to assess that damage, and there are a lot of different things we're doing to try to make it a good assessment out of it. But as far as being able to tell you that X number of animals have died to date and X number will die tomorrow, there's no way we can do that. It's just an impossible task.
Wherever the oil was a problem and the otters existed, you could almost count on 100% mortality rate, at least a very high mortality rate.
Yeah, well, I think Al would like to say something, but I'd like to say this. We have never had a spill like this with sea otters involved. We don't know for sure what the effect of oil on otters in these waters is. We cannot make those kinds of assessments at this time, okay? I think Al would love to do this.
I'll focus on each of the elements of the program as questions arise. To address the sea otters, we brought in Dr. Randall Davis as team leader from the Hubs Marine Research Center in California. With him is a staff of four individuals experienced in the handling of mammals, two DVMs, these veterinarians. The facility now is established for handling, cleaning, and post-recovery of exposed otters. Dr. Davis was brought in as the recognized authority for oil sea otters. He has been under contract to the Federal Minerals Management Service. He is the author of the manual for cleaning of oiled otters. He has done laboratory experiments with sea otters demonstrating oil and recovery of exposed individuals. These are not under actual field conditions, but he has indeed developed laboratory data that support oiling of sea otters and subsequent recovery of exposed individuals. So it's too early to say that 100% mortality from any exposure is likely to result. In fact, the data would argue against that. We have no real concrete dose response information that the data are just not available.
But would it argue for a heavy mortality rate since the animal apparently is less resistant than most marine mammals?
It's totally relative to the extent of exposure. Those with lower exposures, with not heavily oiled, have a very strong possibility of recovery. Dr. Davis has indicated that with some limited oiling and some exposures, these animals have a very, very strong possibility of recovery, which is exactly why his facility is in place for the cleaning, feeding, and subsequent recovery of exposed individuals. He's optimistic that his procedures that he's developed through his research program and with his staff are suitable to treat exposed animals.
Aren't those data from laboratory experiments? Isn't the practical consideration you're trying to catch a very smart, very shifty animal, very difficult to catch? You're dealing with a lot of amateurs who are trying to catch them. An animal which is desperate. Is there really hope for catching these animals and bringing them to some kind of marine center when you're dealing with a lot of volunteers that have never tried to handle sea otters before?
Well, this is the first day that we've had the trajectory movement down into some of the key areas where some of the higher density sea otter areas are. We've recovered at least one animal. There are at least five boats out this afternoon with not amateur crews, but experienced crews. These are DVMs who have all had handling experience. We have dedicated at least two choppers to the recovery of individuals. We're in radio contact with the recovery vessels to ensure a rapid and speedy return to the cleaning facility. So we feel that we've mobilized a very, very ample effort to get these back. Sir.
So if I understand your assessment as such as it is, some of the otters are going to live and some are going to die. Can you be more precise than that?
It's impossible to give you concrete statistics as far as exposures out in the Sound. Again, those animals that have light exposures are very likely to recover. But beyond that, it's impossible to give you a good dose response because the data simply are not available.
Mr. Mackey? Isn't it possible that the dispersants can remove the natural oil from the sea otter's fur and also from the waterfowl? Isn't there a high probability that removing the natural oil from the otters and the waterfowl can cause them severe distress or loss of life due to the environment affecting them? They can't maintain their body heat?
Again, it resolves a question of dose and response. The levels of dispersant used out there in the spray pattern and spray exposures are significantly below the levels that would be expected to cause any of those type effects that you explained.
What's the condition of the otter that you've retrieved?
Logistic information on how far away the concentration, say, of sea otters is and how fast boats can get them back here and all that kind of stuff.
Well, I think, as you know, otters are distributed widely throughout the Sound.
The north end of Montague Island, for instance.
Well, I was trying to indicate that's why we have chopper support.
How long does it take?
We can get chopper back and forth in about 45 minutes.
Thanks.
Yeah, Everett is really the head of our otters and group, so.
Yeah, I want to address one thing that was said. It was said that a lot of amateurs are going to be out after these otters. Randall Davis was authorized by a permit from the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service to capture, transport, and rehabilitate otters. He, through the Fish and Wildlife Service, has hired boats and experienced people to handle those otters. There should not be amateurs out there handling the otters. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service is also going to provide two boats and experienced people out in the Sound to handle otters. We do not want volunteers who do not know how to handle otters out there. They will not help in the effort because they can hurt themselves. The otters can be injured if you don't know how to handle them. You should not have amateurs out there handling otters. We do not want amateurs out there handling otters.
Where are colonies of otters that the oil hasn't reached yet? Which ones are in danger? Can you give us an idea of locations?
Well, the western, as far as we understand, the western extent of the Sound has been oiled fairly heavily all through it, and those colonies are at risk. The eastern portions of the Sound, where there are very high numbers of otters, has not been oiled, and we hope is not oiled in the future, and we expect that those otters are not at risk. And that's
well, Let me rephrase it. Given the direction of the different portions of the spill, are there any colonies of birds, fish, or marine mammals that are in danger because of the direction of the oil?
I'll just address, if you don't mind, I'll address the otters and the birds. There are other people who will address the other things. Okay. There are concentrations of otters throughout the area that has been oiled and probably will be oiled. There are no specific areas that I can tell you right now where there are greater concentrations than any others. Similarly with birds, there are certain concentration areas, bays and et cetera, where there are more birds than in open waters. And those may be oiled and the birds may be at risk. But we can't say that right now that there is any bay that you must protect. If you protect that bay, you will protect larger numbers of birds than anywhere else, okay?
The other people too then on that same question?
Sure. I'm Steve Zimmerman with the National Marine Fisheries Service, and I do those species of marine mammals which our service manages, and those include seals, sea lions, porpoises, dolphins, and whales. The major seal types species in the Sound are the harbor seal and the stellar sea lion. There are around 2,000 stellar sea lions in the Sound, and they occur at three principal locations. Seal Rocks, which is just south of the entrance to Hinchinbrook Entrance, just south of Hinchinbrook Entrance. Point Ellerington, which is over in the western part of the Sound, and the Needles, which is up a little bit inside the Night Island Passage area there. We do not expect that sea lions per se will be particularly affected by the oil. They do not rely on fur to keep themselves warm with the way sea otters do. However, we would be concerned if heavy oil got onto the rookery sites where the pups are born. Pups will start being born in May and June. When they're born, they don't have a blubber layer, so they could be compromised and could suffer the effects of oiling, so we would certainly want to keep those areas as clear of oil as possible. Harbor seals breed and pup and haul out at a diffuse series of sites in Prince William Sound, and there's less of them. There's a few hundred this time of year. The population builds through the summer, and you might get 1,500 to 2,000 later in the year. One thing I saw today, I'll give you a personal observation. I saw two harbor seals coming up in an area that was covered with tar balls, and I presume you all know what a tar ball is, and they were popping up in it, and I was quite interested to note that they weren't covered with oil. The tar balls did not appear as they came up, and the tar balls were everywhere, so there's no way they could have been picking their way among tar balls. I did not see black streaks of tar on their fur, so I don't know if there's the wetness of the fur and the movement through them. At least at this point, tar did not appear to be adhering to them. And they also, like stellar sea lions, rely on blubber to stay warm with rather than fur the way sea otters do. There are several other species which we manage which occur in the Sound. These include killer whales, harbor porpoise, doll porpoise. Well, those are the principal ones. There are some other things that show up around. You get humpback whales in here occasionally. You get minke whales and fin whales in occasionally. Again, we think that those animals can withstand exposure to oil. There have been some tests done feeding heavily oiled fish to some of the seal species anyway, and they appear to be able to ingest oiled prey and digest it and excrete it, basically metabolize it without serious ill effects. So this is something, the magnitude of this spill is something we've never seen before. We may learn things that questions that more or less conventional wisdom. But at this point, for the species we manage, we're hoping that most of them will make it through without large-scale mortality.
Steve, at the earlier press conference, somebody mentioned that two killer whales were seen washed up on shore dead, and there have been reports of a number of seals or sea lions that have been found dead. Do you have a count of how many of these animals, marine mammals that you deal with, have died?
As of this time, we have no substantiated deaths of any of the animals that we manage. I've heard from several people that by third and fourth hand comments those two killer whale statements, and we have not been able to locate any specific information of the people who saw them. In fact, today coming over, I heard that there have been two sets of two dead whales. If any, I say this to anybody out there, if you have specific information on those animals, we'd like to have it. We would go right there. But at this point, those things seem to be rumors. Sea lions tend to lie on the surface of the water. We've had reports of 7 or 8 dead sea lions all lying together on the surface of the water. That is not what we expect dead sea lions would do. They wouldn't be all lying in a tight little pod. We assume that's their normal basking behavior. We wanted to boom the needles. I was told the needles were boomed, and I was later told the boom had been removed. I have not heard that from anybody that was involved in the booming. We would like to see the needles boomed.
Would it be a priority for tomorrow?
From our perspective, yes. I'm sure that would have to be weighed among all the other priorities. Certainly a very high priority is protecting the fish hatcheries. I personally don't know how much boom is available and therefore how thin you could spread it. From our perspective, the needles would be a very high priority area to keep the oil off the rocks so that in the future if pups are born there, that they're not compromised.
What's the population of the needles, and hasn't it already been hit by some machines?
I don't know your answer to your second question. There's several hundred sea lions that haul out on the needles.
Harbor seals, I understand they rely on the tidal action basically to get in and out of the water or something like that. Could you explain that to me and what kind of exposures they might have in situations where they get trapped?
Well, they slither up the beach and slither back down the beach, and they dive without any particular control by the tides that I'm aware of. At least, if I interpret your question right, I don't think the tide particularly affects them. If the tide comes in, they'll move up the beach, and if it goes down, they'll move down the beach. They stay positioned close enough to the water. If they don't fall asleep on you, they stay positioned close enough to the water so they can flee into the water.
So wouldn't you think either Mr. Whitney or Mr. Mackey would be aware of whether the needles were indeed boomed and unboomed, or and whether they what their policy is on that particular question?
I'd certainly turn the microphone over to them if they have any information on that.
We identified the needles this morning as a potential priority. Well, it was identified some time ago, but we did dispatch boom. We understand that one of the state agencies interrupted that particular dispatch, and the boom has now been routed, I believe, to the San Juan Hatchery for protection of that particular area.
Well, who's the authority there? Is it the state, or is it the Exxon Corporation, or is it NOAA?
We understand that it was rerouted by one of the agencies, and I don't have the information at this time. I'm sorry.
Regarding the food web, it'd be interesting to know to what extent aromatic hydrocarbons and other volatiles survive metabolism by the zooplankton and other microorganisms and are passed on or are simply removed from the water column. Is there any data on what's liable to happen to those volatiles?
We're out there now sampling the plankton community to try to get a estimate of population-related effects. Related, perhaps more closely related to your question, we will be doing toxicity testing to discern the particular effects of the hydrocarbons in the water, actual water samples from several stations throughout the sound on representative plankton species, invertebrate species, I'll say.
Talking about doing that at some point in the future? I mean, shouldn't this have been an ongoing process for the last several days?
Samples have been gathered for the past several days.
They have not been analyzed?
The analysis, you need to realize the logistics of mobilizing this sampling program. I've got a very, very diligent field crew who are doing a yeoman's effort. For example, I had a crew leave at 3 this morning. Yesterday I had 2 crews, one left at 7, another one left just at daybreak. One returned at 11, the other turned at after 1 o'clock in the morning. That's a long day. It's a very long ways down there. It's over 70 miles to some of the key areas in and around Night Island. It's a long pull. The logistics of simply getting out there, getting samples, fixing the samples, for appropriate analyses are a very time-consuming and lengthy approach. For that reason, today now we've mobilized crews that are out for several days. They will remain in the field gathering samples on a regular basis and live either on the boat or on beach-related camps, beach support camps. The crews vary depending on the particular task, the size of the vessel, and a number of other issues. Most of our field crews are consist of usually three or four technicians and scientists sampling the particular component of interest, plus the captain and a skipper or a mate.
Good. That's exactly what I was hoping to ask, because there's more than Exxon is involved in this resource assessment. Birds. I guess that's Everett again, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service.
Yes, we, up until this time, we really haven't seen drastic effects on the birds. Today were the first reports that we've had of many birds oiled and many dead birds. As far as counts on the numbers of birds dead and or oiled, we don't have those. And again, I'd like to say that probably we will never know the number of birds killed by this oil. There's no way that we can do that.
On many forests, is it dozens, scores, hundreds, thousands?
Probably hundreds to a thousand in the Green Island area. Okay. Oiled and or dead.
Isn't it true that the large migration, spring migration of birds from the south to the north is just now getting started?
It's just now beginning, and birds will be moving into the sound. We expect in the next couple of three weeks or month and several months.
Doesn't that involve millions of birds?
I really can't address that. How many birds move through the sound? I don't know myself.
What kind of birds seem to be affected the most?
The types of birds that are presently here and are affected are the pelagic species of the gulls, the murres. There are several sea ducks, diving ducks, murres, those types of birds. Those are the birds that are presently in the area and are presently affected, as far as we know.
Well, eagles be affected?
I'd like to add to that. All of the birds I saw today were affected. Every type of species had significant, and I would go from hundreds into thousands to extrapolate from what we saw on one reef. As exact numbers, I don't know, but if you're talking dozens, you're in the wrong sound.
I was not talking dozens. What I was giving you were the species of birds that we know that are predominantly present right now in the sound.
You mentioned hundreds to a thousand in the Green Island area. What about other areas?
Well, that's the area where right now we have the best information. Okay. As the information comes in, we'll have other information from other areas. Right now, we have the most reliable, best information from that area.
Oiled birds have been brought in.
I have only heard of one. Maybe Al could address that. He probably knows more than I do about that, because the people that are doing the bird cleaning and were hired by Exxon.
Is there any percentage of mortality from previous spills, experience in previous spills, is there any percentage of mortality of the birds that will survive as to the birds that will die?
Not that I'm aware of, no. Every spill is so different as far as the species of birds involved and the numbers of the conditions under which they're exposed that it's very hard to say that, 50% of the birds that are oiled will die, because you have all different degrees of oiling. And so that's why it's so difficult to assess how many birds are dead or will die.
With the major flyway here and millions of birds coming through, aren't we likely to have more like tens of thousands rather than hundreds of dead birds?
I'm not going to say there are millions of birds coming through here, and I'm not going to address at this time how many birds are going to die, because we don't know.
Not even a likelihood?
Not even a likelihood until we have time.
How do the birds die? Do they starve to death because they can't fly and get food? Or what happens? What's the cause of death?
Cause of death is very depending on the degree of oiling. If they're heavily oiled, they probably die due to hypothermia. If they're lightly oiled and they preen a lot, they may die by ingestion of oil and or lack of food.
I'd like to address what we're doing in the bird area. It's awfully interesting to make the counts, but it's much more important to mount a rescue effort and to do what we can to save those affected individuals. And in that vein, since this weekend, we've had Alice Berkner of the International Bird Rescue Center in California and her staff of veterinarians on board building the bird center, the cleaning center and holding center in downtown Valdez here, so that we would be in place and in a position to treat these particular affected animals as they're returned and brought back to the facility. We are fortunate at this time of the year, as you identified a bit ago, in that population density is still relatively low of birds in the area. We do have migratory waterfowl heading this way. We're optimistic that the aging of the slick and its trajectory will move it out of the sound and out of the path of concern for birds once they begin to arrive within the next month.
Mr. Mackey, as you say, the most important thing is rescuing these birds. How many have you rescued?
This afternoon, the first bird was returned, and again, we have at least five boats and the two choppers out now. Well, they're probably back by now, so I don't have the most current information up to date.
I'd like to say one thing. I just returned from the Bird Rehabilitation Center. I brought in a bird today. It's the third bird that's been brought in, and what I'd like to know from both the agencies and from Exxon is why on the seventh day of this rescue and cleanup effort hasn't anybody bothered to bring any birds in? And the other question is, so you bring birds in, you clean them up, where are you going to take these birds? For 1,000 square miles we have an oil slick that's continuing to spread, and I want to know where are you going to take contaminated birds after they've been supposedly cleaned up. Thank you.
Well, a couple of questions I think were entailed in there. We've had helicopter overflights and field crews in the area of most severely affected islands searching for these birds since the weekend. Again, the population density is low. It's very difficult. The logistics of getting out there and capturing birds is very, very difficult. We're doing, Alice Berkner's field crews, experienced ornithologists and bird handling technicians, are doing a yeoman's effort in getting out there, mobilizing, trying to find these birds. I don't have the most accurate count from this afternoon. As far as cleanup and release, again, we're looking at the aging and normal aging and development of the oil spill. We're optimistic that we'll be able to hold these birds, as Alice Berkner has done in a number of previous oil spills around the world. We'll be able to hold these birds until such time that they're fully rehabilitated and release them back into the sound. At that time, the spill itself should have aged sufficiently to avoid problems with future oiling of subsequent populations.
Michael Hoskin, the photographer, was here at the 6 o'clock news conference, and he was on the ground at some of these islands saying that he saw dead loons, dead seal, dozens and dozens of birds on Night Island. He said as he walked, he saw scores and scores of dead animals. So my question is, what specifically are you on the ground? Are these people that you're in charge of walking the ground? Why does a photographer go out there, report back hundreds of different types of birds and mammals dead? You people come on the stage and we have like two or three, or we don't know.
It's interesting, isn't it? when we have trained field experts out there that aren't able to find those.
Are they walking the beaches?
They're walking the beaches. They're in the air. They're in helicopter overflights at 50 feet over the water. I've accompanied a couple of the trips myself, personally. They're walking beaches. They're landing and covering the area in great detail, doing all of the beach transects and shoreline transect approaches that they know. That's it. When we continue to hear unfounded rumors of X number of birds in a particular area, we would like to have information to where these birds are. It would make sense to coordinate with our field crews, let us know, and certainly if there are some, if a particular media has found them, we need to correlate. Okay?
Yeah, one of our other scientists wants to make a comment.
I'm Kathy Frost, Department of Fish and Game. I just got off a helicopter. We've been working with the marine mammal and bird team at Green Island. I would reiterate this gentleman's comment. If you're on the ground, you can't tell what's going on. We worked Green Island today. I estimate between 60 and 90% of the birds are oiled in that Green Island given anchorage area. It's the kind of thing I flew extensive aerial surveys day before yesterday. I've spent hundreds of hours in the air, so I'm not a novice observer. You see the birds that are flying. You don't see the birds that are on the beach. We did boat surveys today from 200 meters off the beach. You still don't see the oiled birds until you actually get on the beach. Some of them you darn near step on before you see them. There's, you know, it's certainly not everywhere in the Sound. But the areas that are hit hard are hit very hard. That given anchorage area is a protected area. The birds may come in there to get out of the sea and out of the surf. Large numbers, there's loons in there, murrelets, cormorants are oiled, a lot of old squaw, guillemots, murres, virtually all of the seabirds. Oyster catchers are up on the beach. They look to be clean. At least one oiled eagle was seen today. The eagles are down on the beaches eating carcasses. Sea otters right now, today we sighted about 15 or 16 otters in the Green Island given anchorage area. 30% of those were oiled, some much more heavily than others. We had crews out in the helicopter at Applegate Island, Little Smith Island, Agnes Island, Little Green Island. Oiled otters were found on 3 of the 5 places where people were working. It's a little bit too early to tell what kind of effects we're going to see with sea otters. The oiled animals are apparently hauling out on land more than they normally do so to rest. They're getting very high up above the water level, perching on the tops of rocks, pretty sluggish when they're approached by a boat. And the next week to 2 weeks will probably tell a story on that. But right now, we need to get crews on the ground, close up. It's very difficult to assess. Aerial observations have a real important place. It gives you an overview that you need. It shows you distribution of oil that you need. It focuses our search effort. But particularly people who are interested in the bird effort, I think you've got to get out there and get on the ground.
Given your assessment, can you tell us at what number you would attach or what adjective you would attach to the death toll?
I don't think anybody. I heard a little bit of the press conference on my way over here, and I believe Everett said no, he couldn't put numbers, and I don't think anybody can put numbers on it. I can tell you that a very small area, the Gibbon Anchorage area, is a few miles long and less than a mile or maybe a mile wide. Somewhere between 60 and 90% of the birds there were oiled. I'm a marine mammal biologist. I'm not a bird biologist. I can't tell you how many of those animals will live or won't live, but the oiling is very extensive.
You know?
I was counting sea otters, not birds. We walked one small section of the beach, which was probably a couple of hundred meters long, and counted 85 birds in that small area, and between 85 and 90% of those birds were oiled.
How many birds and sea otters did you bring back?
We brought none back. The animals are heavily oiled now. There are very few that are actually dead. I personally have seen no dead marine mammals. We did see a few birds on that 200 meter transect we walked. There were two dead birds on that stretch. Both of those are in the freezer. Just as the helicopter took off, we found an additional dead murrelet. I think it's a little bit too early. The oil hasn't been down in that Green Island area very long. It's hard to tell where the birds were oiled. A lot of very clean areas have oiled birds, and oily areas may not have very oily birds. Birds are mobile. They fly oil is widely dispersed right now. It's by no means 100% coverage. It's intermittent coverage, but the birds are flying from one area to the other, and they're probably seeking protected places to move up on the beach and rest and preen. So it's difficult to know where they've come from and where they're going.
Survive after they eat an oiled carcass?
You'll have to ask a raptor specialist. I don't know.
As a professional observer of the thing, how would you describe the damage at this point?
It's pretty overwhelming when you're out there on the ground. All of us were just absolutely overwhelmed. I recreate a lot in the Sound as well as work down here, and you know, there's oil over large areas, and at this point I think, you know, no matter what kind of biologist you are, you can't help but be affected by the number of animals out there that are oiled right now. And whether that's a long-term effect or a short-term effect, I can't tell you, but I think, you know, I'm not a bird specialist. I'm helping to identify birds and do bird transects. The phenomenal number of birds in that particular area are oiled. And, you know, the wildlife right now are having a difficult time.
Can I ask one question? I live in Valdez, and I know that there have been many studies done on mammal populations in Prince William Sound, especially the sea otters. Because I've heard numbers of 2,000 this and something, they know the population sizes. Do you feel that you have enough data on population numbers and sizes of particular colonies or areas in the Sound that after the oil has been cleaned up, you can go back in and determine the percentage loss of populations? Because I think you do have fairly good numbers to start with.
It's a very difficult thing to do, as you've been told by a lot of us. One of the efforts Fish and Game right now is involved in is we do have maps and lists of identified sea lion haulouts in the Sound and harbor seal haulouts. We're in the process right now of visiting every single one of those haulouts, categorizing whether the haulout is oiled, to what extent it's oiled, taking photos, and trying to document, you know, what's happening right now. Those areas have been surveyed in the past at least once, some of them two or three times. We'll follow that here for the next year and farther into the future than that. As you've also heard from other investigators, one of the problem, most of our data are from later in the year. We have very few late winter, early spring data. That's also a problem with sea otters. Sea otters are quite well studied in the Sound, you're right, but they're studied at point sources. Orca Inlet by Cordova and Sheep Bay. A lot of research has gone on there. There's been quite a lot of research over quite a long period of time by Fish and Wildlife Service in the Green Island, Gibbon Anchorage area. There again, most of those numbers are for the summer months. People are making every effort right now to count what is there now, and that will be compared to historical data. We'll do the best we can. It's difficult at best.
Well, I know that they did have a tagging study on sea otters. Now, I'm not sure if that has ceased or not, but they did tag quite a few of the sea otters out there. Were the tagged otters in the area that, or I should say, were some of those otters in the areas affected by the oil, some of the tagged specimens, radio tagged?
The Fish and Wildlife Service Sea Otter crew is in Cordova now, to my knowledge, unless they're here and I don't know it. They have been flying and monitoring from over there. Based on my observations and given Anchorage today, there were only about 15 or 20 otters there. That's not near as large a number as are there later in the summer and in the fall time. I've only worked in the Green Island area for one day. Fish and Wildlife Service has conducted surveys over there all week long. They've had data, they have flights from at least the last three or four days. I don't know if those numbers have changed in the last few days. If tagged animals are there, they'll know it, I'm sure.
Well, I know that you've been giving numbers, and there are historically numbers for the populations out there, and I wonder again if somehow this could be related to post-oil times as opposed to pre-oil times.
We expect to do those types of things. We don't know what kind of results we will get, but that's certainly what we're trying to do.
I have another question on your surveys, too. Have you been finding many of the salmon fry emerging at this time?
Fish and Game is set, at least off the resolution, the vessel that I was on, they're scheduled to start beach seining in the next few days. There may be other ongoing efforts, but there is going to be beach seining conducted here in the very near future.
Okay.
I have one more question.
I was saying we wanted to get the fin fish pushing up.
U.S. to Alaska Department of Fish and Game.
That's correct.
I have one question concerning the birds and the mammals.
Wait a second. Let's let the gentleman and the finfish talk about that, then we can take that question.
My name is Dennis Hanpa. I'm the regional HAANPAA, regional management biologist for Alaska Department of Fish and Game, Division of Commercial Fisheries. Just give you a brief rundown. Fish are a little different than birds and mammals. You can't see them real readily out there. So we're in the process right now. We do have a research task force assembled in Cordova putting together a number of various projects that will assess the various species of finfish and shellfish throughout Prince William Sound over a period number of years here. We also have our Montague, research vessel Montague, out on the grounds. They went out last Friday already. They're doing pre-emergent fry digs in all our major pink streams. They've covered most of the eastern shore, the northern shore, and are over on the western shore right now. This will continue on until next week and possibly into the following week. Preliminary results this time, most of the fry digs are above average. That's all the information I have on that until they assess all the data. But the fry digs are looking real good at this time. My major role here is the commercial fisheries, herring and salmon. We're concerned about the herring fisheries. We're looking at the spawning grounds. We will be out flying surveys assessing the herring as they come in. And on Saturday, we will be making an announcement regarding the herring pond fishery. I'll answer any questions that I can.
Have any of the herring returned? Are they spawning in any areas that have been impacted?
Saturday there was one small spawning on St. Matthews Bay, approximately 140 tons sighted there. There was no oil in that area at that time. There was also about 200 tons spotted in Tetitlik Narrows today.
Any oil there?
No oil that we know of in that area.
The pond fishery is reopened. What kind of quality assurance things might be done?
Again, there will be some water sampling done in that area prior to any announcement of an opener. There will be some sampling of fish prior to any announcement of opener.
Can you tell me how oil is likely to affect salmon fry when they're released?
That data I don't know offhand.
Do you have any idea what the impact would be on releasing salmon fry into an oily water?
No, I don't.
Who would have that information?
I'm sure there's some in the literature. I haven't researched it myself.
Will that affect when or if the fry are released from the various hatcheries around here?
Okay, that's definitely on the hatchery scene, yes. As far as the natural stocks, we have no control on when they're emerge.
No.
Yeah.
Where is St. Matthews Bay? What island?
It's over on the eastern shore below Port Fidalgo.
You said the fry eggs were better than average. You mean in terms of size, numbers?
Density. Numbers.
That's just possible. Ma'am, you're with the state of Alaska, is that right?
Yes.
You seem to have provided a lot more information in the seventh day here of this thing as compared to what we've heard from Mr. Cornett, any of the Exxon officials, the gentleman, Mr. Whitney, representing NOAA here, and Mr. Mackey. I wondered, in that they are supposedly coordinating this effort to both clean this thing up and try to help wildlife, I wondered if you're working under their direction or if you're working more in an autonomous fashion in conjunction with the state.
We're all trying to coordinate as much as we possibly can in an effort like this. It's an overwhelming undertaking. And no matter how hard you try to coordinate, there are so many people and so many groups and different kinds of animals out there that you will never have absolutely perfect coordination. But to the degree possible, the agencies are trying to keep each other informed. All of our groups are doing the best we can.
Like the woman here mentioned before, there were three birds that come in 7 days. Do you believe that if there was the direction for a labor-intensive effort to take some of these boats that are still sitting in this harbor and over in Cordova and take them out with people who are standing around here wanting to help and doing nothing, that we could indeed be having a positive impact on rescuing some of these animals?
I think part of what's happened in terms of birds not showing up to date, and perhaps they're starting to today, is anyone who's looked at spills, and I haven't seen one before, will tell you that sometimes the impact seems not to be there, and then all of a sudden it's everywhere. And I think that may be what we're seeing this week. Earlier in the week, the oil really hadn't reached a lot of these little beaches. It hadn't begun to accumulate on feathers. And so people were telling you the truth when they said, we really haven't seen much in the way of oiled birds. All of a sudden today, they started to show up. The other thing that's happened is a progression in our research methodology. The first thing you do when you go out there is you need a broad overview. So what you do is you get every airplane and every helicopter that you can get in the state of Alaska up there in the air looking. And you look for where the oil is. You try to get an idea of what birds are where, what marine mammals are where. The next step then is to get on the ground and start doing boat surveys and start walking beaches. And I think it hasn't really been until the last 2 or 3 days that most of us have had the opportunity to get out on the ground and really see what's happening.
In terms of days, could you estimate at what point the work will stop being done, the lion's share of it, by experts and start to become labor-intensive for just general effort to do some of the objectives?
I don't know how to answer that. There are a lot of oiled birds out there, and I guess if people are looking for birds to clean up, they now exist.
Funny question. You know, like a lot of the people that are involved in marine biology were saying 2 or 3 days ago that you could predict exactly what was going to happen. And warned, in fact, me and other reporters that people from Exxon and people from the oil companies would get up and say, we have no birds today, we have one bird a day. Kind of intimating that things are looking good, well knowing that in 3 or 4 days, or 5 days, or 6 days, there was going to be an enormous amount of havoc and mortality among mammals and birds. I mean, is everyone here, do you not have some sense of what's going to be happening on in 3 or 4 or 5 days from now, the amount of devastation this is going to be?
For some species, yes. In my particular instance, I'll tell you, I've spent the last 12 years working on oil spill assessment, doing studies for the federal and the state government, trying to assess possible effects of oil and gas exploration and development or different industrial development on marine mammals. This is the first time it's happened. No matter how bright you are, no matter how carefully you think, you can't predict everything until it happens. And right now, it's happening. It's happening for the first time. You make a lot of intelligent guesses about what you think the impact is going to be on sea otters or what you think the impact might be on sea lions or killer whales. You know, I mean, you think, well, an animal that knows how to do task A probably won't do something else. Well, you know, something happens and you can't always predict. People do unpredictable things and so do animals. Nobody's gone out there and dumped, you know, 1,000 sea otters in the middle of an ocean that has oil floating on the surface. And you know, we couldn't predict what would happen. There have been spills. What, maybe birds are the thing that people could predict better than most. Sea lions. Nobody knew if sea lions would go into oil or if they'd avoid oil. They certainly don't avoid it. They're swimming in it. They're hauling out in it. We still can't even speculate, you know, whether that has a long-term effect or not. The same is true of harbor porpoises or killer whales. They're surfacing in the oil. Some people thought they might not. Some people thought they'd avoid slicks. That they have not done. But what that means in terms of the biology of the animal, we just don't know because this is the first time it's happened.
Well,
we get one good assessment, one last assessment on bird, please?
I'd like to go on to another area of assessment, the beaches. Eric Gunlap has been evaluating the beaches.
I hate to take the mic away from Kathy. My name is Eric Gundlach, G-U-N-D-L-A-C-H. I'm a coastal geologist working as a consultant to Alaska Department of Environmental Conservation. I've been looking at oil on beaches since about 1975, and they called me up and almost as soon as it happened, and I've been working with them since that time. It's interesting, as you say, being able to predict it from a couple days in advance. Well, when we first looked at the spill, it was all setting out in the middle of the ocean, middle of the sound, I should say. I did the shoreline, and the oil, there was very little oil on the shoreline. Where was it? Where was all this oil? And then we had the blow 3 days ago, blew all the oil down into this section by Knight Island, Eleanor Island, and Ingot Island, and some of the other islands that you've been hearing about. Now we have shoreline impacts. Started about 2 days ago, severe oil impacts along that shoreline. Coating of the beach on the order of about 7 centimeters thick along the upper intertidal, several inches thick. Most of the oil is residing in the upper part. If it's a very heavily impacted beach, it'll go down to the lower portion of the beach. Quick evaluation of it. I flew the three islands, Knight, Ingot, and Eleanor together, and Smith Island is about at least 60 miles of oiled beach out there. I'm talking about oiled gravel beaches. The coastline here has a lot of dominating cliffs coming down to the water's edge with pocket gravel beaches. If you've noticed as you fly around that the news reporters, you'll see that the oiled gravel beaches really soak up the oil quite well. The stage we're at now, we are doing daily overflights. We are starting to set up ground stations to determine how fast this oil will be removed and set priorities for cleanup of the gravel beaches. I think that's a broad overview of it. In a personal assessment, I've looked at large oil spills, Amoco Cadiz, one in Patagonia, some in Texas as well, and this is a large oil spill, and some of the environmental effects that we're seeing, we happen to almost, when we landed our float plane, we almost hit a dead sea otter, which we brought back. And that I've never seen before, seeing marine mammals damaged by or killed by an oil spill. I'll take any questions if I can answer them.
How do you propose to clean up the gravel beaches? What methods will you be using?
We're a scientific support group for the cleanup operations. What we will do is we will set priorities for those beaches and work with the cleanup operators on how to clean beaches. There's a lot of people, especially here, that have much more experience in actually getting out there and physically cleaning up the beaches. Some of the most common techniques are flushing and collecting the oil that flushes off the beach. However, I caution you, it's going to be a race against time. We've seen concentrations.